dark. No regrets. That's the motto Celia's father had always repeated to her and her sister. Life was hard, but he never let that take away his smile. Sometimes it was a sad smile, sometimes a smirk, but most often a genuine smile that he shared with his daughters and neighbors. People said her mother was not as optimistic as her father, but nevertheless, she was a lovely woman, and they both belonged together. This influence led Celia to enjoy every little thing that she could in her brief time in Alda. Their garden was as healthy as could be asked for. Carrots as long and thick as a thumb, potatoes that you could barely wrap your hand around, even a watermelon or two would show up in their harvest. The farmers on the edge of town harvested almost half the wheat they planted, enough to make bread for everyone most seasons. They were lucky compared to what they heard from the few who had come through town now and again. Travelers always brought ill tidings. A collective sigh made its way through everyone when a small group or creaking wagon visited their streets. Some wanted to join them. In the past, they were happy to take in stragglers from the ruined outlands, but now they were full. All the homes and inn rooms were taken, and any other visitors were politely urged on their way. This always bothered Celia's younger sister, Serena. "There goes more," Serena commented morosely. "I wish we didn't have to make them leave." "We have no choice. We have a good life here and can't take on any more people. Where would they live?" Serena crossed her arms as the small group of vagrants disappeared from the outskirts of town. "We can build homes, you know." "Building homes takes time and resources. Where would they stay until then?" "Why can't we build a few simple places before others arrive?" That made sense, but that would also require people to stop what they were already doing. Everyone had their hands full, keeping the town in the shape it was in. Food required constant care to grow the way it did. Animals had to be guarded nonstop to protect them. There was too much to do to build more homes. "Let's go see what the apothecary needs today," Celia stated, changing the subject. Serena sighed and let her arms drop. She acted her age, which meant constantly annoyed at 19 years old. The young woman knocked on the wooden door with the symbol of the goddess of healing carved on it. Slowly, Celia pushed it open, its hinges creaking. They were free to enter, but occasionally, Gregory, the apothecary, would have a visitor or patient in his entry room. The girls preferred to be polite and give him the chance to tell them to wait outside. "Anything for us today, Gregory?" Celia called out.
"Celia?"
An old voice rang out from behind another door. Gregory came out from a back room with his hands covered in green. He'd been working with herbs all day, apparently.
"Oh, good," he said upon seeing the two of them. "I'm short on monk's hood. They should be in bloom on the West Ridge. Could you two bring me back a basketful?"
Straight to the point, as always. He turned back around and returned to whatever he was doing in the other room. "Shall we?" Serena trilled. The two sisters left and found Nolan, a city guard assigned to escort those leaving the town borders. Anyone going out to harvest, scavenge, or even go for a walk was required to take a guard with them. A few people had gone missing lately, and the number of disappearances had steadily risen over the last few years. "The West Ridge?" he repeated upon being asked.
"I never liked it there."
Neither Celia nor Serena cared to ask why. Everyone had places they hated going. Celia's was the Northern River. The last time she went there, she swore she'd seen people in the trees beyond it. She wrote them off as shadows, but no more than 3 days later, someone went missing. She reported it, but the subsequent search turned up nothing. Celia swore to never go back, but knew that she'd have to at some point unless they wanted to start catching and drinking rainwater. Her sister's trilling voice began to grate on Celia's nerves. She was flirting with a guard. Nolan was young and handsome, true enough. He smelled like leather and steel. The sword sheathed at his side clanked on his legs as they walked.
The presence of an armed individual should have made her feel safe, but it was superficial at best. Everyone knew that everywhere outside the town was dangerous. The things that took people couldn't be fended off by sharp steel. No one had heard from a mage in decades. The people they sent off earlier that day were likely already on their way to some early grave. Everyone knew the cities were dangerous. Too many people drew attention to dark things. Too few people, and you likely couldn't survive long. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Celia wasn't a pessimist, as some called her. She just knew their reality. To most of the town, ignoring reality made things easier. Her father probably thought that way. That was how he kept smiling. Ignorance was infectious, though. He made those around him relax, including herself. It took less than an hour to get to the western ridge, a patch of forest running up to a cliff's edge overlooking a small valley below. The river ran nearby and fell over the cliff's face, roaring into that same valley. You couldn't hear it from here, but she'd gone there once. No good foraging to be had, and according to the hunters, no good game either. Here, though, where the trees were thinner and more brush was present, grew several different batches of herbs and useful plants. It made Celia wonder if they'd been planted in the past by someone. Her dark imagination also went to the image of a former townsperson or traveler killed by something, and their pack's contents scattered here. "What are you looking for?" Nolan asked.
"Monkshood," Serena said. She was already scanning the ground ahead.
"It has purple flowers," Celia added. "It almost looks like lavender from a distance."
"Ah, okay," he said. The guard made an honest attempt to help them look. Celia found other useful plants and called Serena over. They'd both brought baskets, and Serena's was reserved for things other than monkshood. Any extra they found could be bartered or used by them personally. She pointed out the bright yellow blossoms of evening primrose, and Serena happily plucked a handful for her basket. They also found fennel, flax, and wood sorrel. They had yet to find any monkshood, however.
"I found some,"
Nolan called out. He sounded quite proud of himself. Serena giggled when they walked over to him. She took the purple bunch from the guard.
"That's lavender,"
she said teasingly, slapping the stalks against him and causing small blossoms to fall.
"Oh," he said dejectedly. "So I'm looking for another type of purple flower."
"Yep," Serena chirped.
"Wait, is that it?"
he asked, pointing to the flax in Celia's basket.
"No, that's flax," Celia responded.
"Gods, how many purple herbs are there?"
"Hyssop, sage, and sweet violet, to name a few,"
Celia replied, squinting as she tried to remember more. Serena tossed the lavender into her basket.
"How about bluebell?"
"Oh, yes." Nolan's mouth curled on one side.
"Why is it called bluebell if it's purple?"
"I didn't name them,"
Serena scoffed.
"Oh, and Dame Zero."
"Dame Zero is more pink, I believe," Celia said. Serena rolled her eyes.
"Fine, how about light purple?"
"Pink is light red, not light purple," Celia countered. Serena chuckled, and then they both noticed that Nolan wasn't next to them anymore. He'd walked over closer to the trees.
"Nolan?"
Serena called out to him. He shushed them and held out a hand behind him, urging them to stay. His other hand was wrapped around his sword's grip. Celia felt her heart beat faster. She looked over, and Serena's face was marred with concern.
"What is it?"
Celia asked. Nolan was leaning from side to side, craning his head to see further into the trees.
"Thought I saw something."
"Probably just a deer," Serena said, though she didn't sound confident.
"You both wait here."
He took a few more steps into the woods.
"That's not a good idea, Nolan. We'll go look somewhere else," Celia suggested.
They both watched as Nolan turned around and offered a shrug.
I'm not going any further, just right here.
The sisters turned to face each other. They continued half-heartedly looking at the brush to find the herb they'd come for.
I don't like this, Serena whispered. I'm sure it's fine.
They searched for several more minutes when they finally found a small bunch of monk's hoods. They breathed a conjoined sigh of relief. It was time to get Nolan and go home. Both sisters turned to where the guard had walked into the forest. Serena had just begun to call for him when her voice broke. He wasn't there. Celia grunted in annoyance.
Where did he go? She complained.
Nolan?
Serena yelled, sounding worried.
Nolan!
Celia echoed, but in an aggravated tone.
Should we go look for him?
I'm not going in there.
Serena sighed.
Neither am I.
Nolan!
Celia shouted. Her voice seemed to echo off the trees. They agreed to wait for a little longer. When their baskets were full and could not hold any more, neither could Celia's patience.
I'm leaving without him.
Just a moment,
Serena practically pleaded.
Let me go look for him.
Celia's mouth dropped open.
Absolutely not.
I won't go far, I promise.
Serena,
Celia began, but her sister was already gone, jogging through the bushes to where Nolan had entered the forest.
Damn it, Serena!
Celia cursed aloud and followed after her.
You don't have to follow me,
Serena called over her shoulder.
I have to catch you so I can throw you in the river, Celia shouted back.
The sound of Serena laughing up ahead made Celia smile. That ridiculous girl. She was too much like her father. Celia stopped. It became quiet. Serena's laughter no longer came from up ahead. The sounds of the insects stopped. The world was quiet, heavy, and somehow darker.
Serena?
Her voice came out too low to do any good, but she was afraid to be any louder.
Nolan?
Celia felt her body locked in place. The shadows of the trees were deeper than before. They looked like silhouettes of darkness against the backdrop of the rest of the forest. She saw things within those shadows. Things that were familiar, but strangely twisted. Like a face in a broken mirror or a disturbed puddle. She still couldn't move. Fear fused her joints together, froze her blood and atrophied her muscles. Her lungs felt like iron plates. Even when she wanted to run, she couldn't force her body to respond. Her physical and mental self belonged to those things in the shadows. She kept telling herself to run. She remembered her father's smile, her sister's laugh. Her breath came back to her. She croaked out a pitiful scream. The things in the dark made promises and threats. Celia felt her legs give, and she turned, and finally ran. It wasn't until she fell into the bushes and brush that she remembered she'd passed something on her way back out of the forest. A basket on its side, herbs spilled onto the ground.
Serena!
She screamed. She sat there on the ground, shouting for her sister over and over again. Celia rested her arms on her knees, and she sat her head on her arms and cried. A heaving cry that soaked her shirt and sleeves. Then, she waited. When darkness began to fall, she stood and walked in a daze back to the village. Her basket remained where she left it, on the ground by the woods where Serena and Nolan disappeared. Her foot hurt. She looked down and saw that one of her shoes had come off at some point. Once she entered town, a trail of single bloody footprints followed her home. Celia entered their small home and saw Serena's door open. For a moment, her heart raced at the thought her sister had come home. When she saw the empty room, she remembered that Serena never closed her door. A fresh wave of grief came over Celia. She sat in a chair at the dinner table. Her father's leather gloves, which he used in the garden, sat on a shelf. They never moved them, left them as a reminder of him.
I'll find her, Papa.
At some point, a knock rapped on the door. Celia didn't remember asking anyone to enter, but she must have said something. The door opened slowly. Gregory entered with two guards following him, both carrying torches to light the darkness both outside and inside.
Celia, thank the gods you're okay,
he said as he ran over to her.
Are you hurt? Whose blood is outside?
Celia looked over at him, reality coming back slowly.
What? Blood?
The footprints outside your house, they lead all the way from the entrance to town.
His words were urgent and worried. Celia looked down at her bare foot, turning it over to look at it for the first time. It was crisscrossed with cuts and covered in grass matted with dried blood.
We need to get this treated. You two, go find Serena, he ordered.
She's gone,
Celia said flatly. All emotion had left her.
Serena and Nolan are gone.
Gods, Gregory whispered. What do you mean, gone?
They went into the woods. Now they're gone.
The guards looked at one another and then back to Gregory. The apothecary pursed his lips.
Let's get this taken care of before it's infected. Then we'll talk.
The guards remained inside while Gregory lit candles to light up the dark interior of the house. He removed the satchel carried around his shoulder on a wide strap. He opened it and pulled out one item after another as though he'd prepared for this injury beforehand. One guard brought a basin of water, the other some clean rags. Gregory cleaned her wounds, applied tinctures and ointments, and then wrapped her foot. All the while, Celia sat there stoic and unflinching. Nothing ran through her mind. Her body and soul were numb.
There, you two can leave now. I'll stay with her and find out what happened.
You'll let us know, Gregory, one of the guards asked.
Of course.
When the door closed, the inside of the home was silent. Celia continued to stare, bleary and red-eyed, at her father's gardening gloves. Gregory pulled a seat over so he could look at Celia as they spoke. Her eyes went past him. He took her hands in his. They were soft, yet bony.
What happened, Celia? Tell me everything,
he said empathetically. His voice was low and warm. Celia was silent at first. After a few moments, she managed to put words together. She told him about the herbs, about Serena and Nolan, and about their young flirtations. She told him about Nolan going into the woods and disappearing. Gregory then interjected with a question.
He left you two alone and walked into the woods.
Not very far, Celia added. We could still see him.
Celia explained that she and Serena were both surprised to see him gone. Then Serena ran after him. And she went after Serena. Tears threatened to come back, but never materialized. Celia told of how she'd passed Serena's basket on her way out of the forest. That her sister simply disappeared.
What shadows?
Gregory asked.
Shadows?
Celia replied in confusion. She'd never mentioned shadows.
You said you saw things in the shadows. What things? Animals? Could that be what took Serena and Nolan?
I never said anything about shadows,
Celia said hesitantly.
Yes, dear, you went into quite the amount of detail. It sounded like you were quite traumatized.
Celia felt a twinge of that earlier fear. She swore she never talked about the things in the forest, but there was no hint of deception in Gregory's face or voice.
I did see something. But I don't know what it was.
Gregory placed the back of his wrist on her forehead.
You don't have a fever. That's good.
She wanted to protest that she knew what she was talking about, but that meant admitting she might have talked about something she didn't remember talking about in the first place. Gregory checked her over and told her that she was fine, other than the cuts and bruises on her foot.
Gregory, what happened to my sister?
Celia asked. She didn't know if he'd have any answers, but she wanted any comfort that could be offered, even if it was just lip service. He shook his head just slightly. His head slowly rolled back until he was looking up at the ceiling. He put his hands in his pockets.
I don't know, Celia, but two guards are looking now and one of their own is missing as well. They won't give up.
No regrets. Celia would have to put her father's words to the test for her sister and for Nolan.
It's been over a month, Celia said, her words filled with heated accusations.
The worst part of all this was not knowing what happened to her sister or Nolan.
We've been looking every day,
the captain of the guard returned. She had to admit that his eyes appeared tired and empathetic.
Nolan went missing too, not just your sister. We haven't given up on them.
You haven't?
Celia rebutted. She sighed and put her hands on her hips. Then she lifted one hand and rubbed her eyes with a thumb and forefinger.
I'm sorry, she said. I don't know what to do. I've looked and looked. Went against everything my mind and body were screaming at me to not do and went back to where they went missing.
Her voice caught, and she felt her throat tingle with promised grief. The captain stood from his desk and walked around to her, his boots clicking on the stone floor. He put his hands on her shoulders.
We'll keep looking, but you need to be prepared. At this point, we're most likely looking for their bodies, Celia.
He spoke without hesitation, like he'd prepared them beforehand. They still came out coated in sympathy and care, though. Celia nodded and sniffled. She wiped her eyes with the back of her hand and left the captain behind at his desk. Outside, the first cool wind of autumn struck her, almost taking her breath away. It carried the weight of portent, and she shuddered at more than just the cold. She went home, refusing to come back outside. She built a roaring fire that evening, one that was sure to keep going long after she went to sleep.
How are you doing, Celia?
The old baker's wife asked. She was a sweet lady, plump and rosy-cheeked, with a voice like a bell. It startled Celia from her thoughts, which had grown darker by the day. The previous night brought little sleep despite the fire. Autumn was approaching quickly, and the townsfolk felt the cold coming in. Talk of the incoming harvest buzzed amid rumors of early snow.
I'm getting better, Ms. Kinlan. Thank you for asking.
She lied. Her tone probably wasn't convincing whatsoever. A small loaf of bread slid into her view.
Here you go, dear,
the bell tolled softly.
You should really eat more. It is going to be all right.
Celia gingerly took the bread in her hands and looked over at Miss Kindlin, who smiled at her. Her eyes were sad, though, and Celia saw pity in them.
Thank you,
Celia said, with as much genuine gratitude as she could muster. She placed the bread in her basket along with the other meager goods for which she had the strength to shop. Without her sister, she felt her resilience draining away. The mystery of her disappearance only made it worse. After returning home, Celia took out the bread and the small jar of honey she'd traded for. She managed a few bites before the tears and bile rose again.
Damn it,
she muttered, seething. Celia got up and threw on her cloak. She grabbed a knife the blacksmith had given her. Apparently it came out deficient, and she bartered for it at a large discount. All she wanted was something sharp. She hoped her anger could do the rest. At this point, she didn't even care if she came back alive. It was still early in the day. If she left now, she would have plenty of daylight to search again, maybe in a different area this time. Regardless of her intentions or the plans made on her way out of town and toward the West Ridge, she became lost in a storm of random thoughts and scattered ideas. Every time the wind blew, it came in quick gusts, plucking up shadows from the ground and causing them to billow up and out like flocks of ghostly crows. Celia felt dizzy. She kept walking, forcing one step after the other. If she passed out here on the outskirts of town, who knew what would happen to her? The dark things. They could come for her. Her head suddenly cleared, like the sun breaking through storm clouds. The actual sun blinded her with its brilliance. It felt like she'd walked out of a pitch-black room into midday. One hand reflexively went up and shielded her stinging eyes. The forest of the West Ridge spread out before her, beckoning her. She didn't remember walking long enough to be this far. It didn't matter. No regrets. The forest looked different. All these years, it was intimidating to face the shadows and not know what waited in there, natural or otherwise. Celia always pushed that fear down, just like she did everything else. Life wouldn't care about her fears. No regrets. But now, the forest looked mundane. It induced neither fear nor serenity, which her sister often felt the flowers invoked. It was a collection of wood, leaves, and blossoms, tall grasses and creatures of various kinds, nothing more. She walked through the flowers and herbs and felt them crushing under her feet. The cool shade of the trees washed over her, nearly audible in the way it devoured the shining sun. Underneath the canopy, it was peaceful. No birds, no insects, no townspeople gossiping and haggling. It was cool and quiet. Why did she hate it so much? Oh yes, it had taken her sister, and Nolan, the poor guard. Something caught her eye. Celia turned and saw a large discolored patch on one of the trees. It wrapped partly around one of the trunks. It was an irregular shape, and she thought that it was just moss or something similar at first. On closer inspection, it was some kind of stain. It smelled strange, so she turned and let it be, her nose curling at the stench. The forest didn't seem as frightening, but it seemed lonely. Like nothing living other than the trees called it home. She saw more of the strange, discolored patches on other trees as she walked. A sound swelled up in her ears, like thousands of birds and insects chirping and chittering all at once. It had an echoing quality, as though the sound originated from deep in a cave. That's when she felt her blood chill again. The shadows between the trees became darker, much as they did when Serena had disappeared. The black shade quivered and stopped as though it were some flexing muscle. Thin strands of the darkness snaked out on the ground, crawling towards her. Celia ran. No screaming or crying, only her legs pumping as fast as they could go. The darkness and its coiling fingers seemed to close in around her, but she broke into the blinding light of the field beyond the forest's edge and felt like she'd crossed a veil into another world, a safer one. Her chest hurt like she'd been holding her breath for too long. Her tongue felt dry and swollen. Pressure built within her forehead and gave Celia a headache. She began walking along the tree line, heading east towards the river and the waterfall. Celia never entered the forest. She didn't have the courage. Walking didn't help her build any nerve. The interior of the woods appeared normal, but she feared what waited for the moment she stepped inside. Worse, she knew to some extent what waited. She walked until she reached the river, and the sun began to edge low on the horizon.
"I'll wait for you,"
Celia said aloud in a soft voice. Her sister was in there, somewhere. Serena's presence was there, just on the edge of awareness. Celia knew it. All that was left was to return to town. Days, weeks, months. They all passed, slow and lonely. Gregory offered advice and medicines for Celia's depression and sleepless nights. At least once a week she had a nightmare about chasing after Serena, only for her to disappear once more. Her dreams taunted her relentlessly by replaying the heart-wrenching moment over and over again. Celia had tried returning to the forested ridge and searching for Serena. Every time Celia went, whether to gather materials for Gregory and other townsfolk, or simply to continue looking for her sister, she could never once enter the cold shadows under that canopy.
"No regrets,"
she repeated to herself, but her father's words held no more strength for her. Thus each day she spent in a misery-induced haze. She ate to sustain her strength. She used her strength to work and trade. She used her work and trade to be able to eat and sleep under a roof. All the positive words from friends and strangers alike did nothing to persuade her to move on. Her sister had been all Celia had, her only family, her only real friend. Things continued this way until a stranger, mysterious and unique, came to town. Their arrival prompted a wave of fresh gossip and concern among those in authority. No sooner had this stranger entered town than they were called before the town council. The mayor, captain of the guard, merchant lord, and judge. People whispered about what they were doing here and why their interview with the council took so long. Some were excited. Others were cautious. Celia could not have cared less. The one thing she took note of, along with everyone else, was the stranger's robes. They were very clean for someone who must have been traveling the roads. The hems were not torn or muddied, not even frayed. The material used to make them glistened, but also seemed so black as to soak up the light. Black leather gloves covered their hands. Their heavy cowl covered their face in shadow so that no one yet knew if they were a man, woman, or even human. When the stranger emerged, those present, Celia included, watched them depart with measured elegance from the wood-laced stone council building. Both hands worked to remove the leather gloves. The pale skin revealed them to be human, at least. The hands gracefully rose to grip the sides of the cowl in a three-fingered pinch. After the shadow lifted from the face, the stranger was revealed to be a man. The cowl settled just beneath jet-black hair trimmed short. Gray eyes quickly scanned the surroundings. His brow was slightly furrowed, but his chin was up. He knew what he was looking for, but not quite where to find it. One hand ran through his hair and then slid over his clean-shaven face. A very handsome clean-shaven face, Celia had to admit. She smirked. Women old and young had a sparkle in their eyes now. Some of the men frowned. She could tell by the look in their eyes that the merchant smelled fresh blood in the water. Apparently, he found what he was looking for. His eyes stopped, meeting Celia's for a moment. She felt a touch of tangled nerves as his measured walk brought him straight toward her. Then she realized he was walking past her, to the inn. His eyes met hers again for a moment as he passed her, and she felt embarrassed. One of the old women smiled at her. Celia rolled her eyes and returned to what she was doing before. After finishing her chores and errands, she returned home. It was interesting seeing a new traveler in town. It was nice, if momentary, and a distraction from everything. The following morning was brisk and windy. It was getting colder by the day. Celia dressed in thick layers and could still feel a touch of chill through them. Gregory asked for a special batch of herbs today. It was an unusual request. He didn't typically need ingredients of this kind. Work was work, however, and it would take Celia back to the forest ridge. She stood at the edge of town, holding her basket in one arm and pulling her scarf tighter with her free hand. She somewhat dreaded this trip. The cold, combined with going back to that place to once again be hurt and disappointed, left a sour taste in her mouth. "May I join you?" someone asked from behind her. Her brows knitted and she turned. No, she said bluntly. "No offense, but I have no idea who you are. Why are you asking me?"
"Gregory asked that I assist you,"
he said with a hint of a disarming smile. "And how long have you known Gregory?" she questioned sardonically. "About 14 hours." His reply was deadpan. She scoffed. "Why did he ask you to assist me? I've fetched his ingredients for years." "I'm assuming they're not his usual order." "How do you know that?" "Because I asked him for them." Celia bit her tongue. She looked at him and tried to gauge his intent as much as possible. His gaze was soft but focused. The smile still lingered on his lips. "No guard?" she asked. "Someone of my talents doesn't need a guard." "It's not for you," Celia replied pointedly. "You don't trust strangers, I get that," he tried to explain. Celia raised her eyebrows. He continued in his attempt to convince her. "Your council trusts me." "After one day?" "After what I told them, yes." His reply was cryptic but resolute. "If it makes you feel better, he'll be there too." The stranger pointed to a guard standing a few dozen feet back. Celia's eyes widened. She hadn't seen him there before. Such was her distraction and surprise from the stranger. Realization hit and her face grew hot. "You were playing with me." The stranger chuckled. "I was. Let's go," he said as he walked past her. The guard followed and grinned at Celia. Was the entire town trying to piss her off? They began their walk to the ridge, across grass fading from summer green to autumn's golden colors. Trees began their transition as well. The leaves shifted to reds and yellows that Celia once thought bright and beautiful. Now their colors dulled in her eyes and gave the impression of blood and bile. The wind kicked up, sending some early fallen leaves swirling in the air and skittering along the ground. She wrapped her arms tighter around herself, the handle of her basket hooked through her right arm.
"Gods, it's getting cold,"
the guard commented. She never asked his name. "It is," the stranger replied. He flexed his gloved fingers and began making some strange hand gestures. He muttered some words, unlike anything Celia had heard before. She recognized its source from stories, though, and from what followed them. She felt a warmth come over her as though a fireplace suddenly sprang up beside them. Her breath was no longer visible, and her eyes were no longer tearing up from the cold wind. Celia rubbed her hands together one last time before relaxing her arms. Her muscles finally felt relief from tightening due to the cold.
"I've never seen magic before. Honestly, I thought it was dead."
"Magic is never dead," the stranger replied, with a hint of a lilt in his voice. "If anything, it grows stronger. Well, most magic."
"Most magic?"
Celia asked with genuine curiosity. She'd only ever read and heard of magic as a practice. Most of the time, it was told from the viewpoint of possibly being what destroyed the world. Magi weren't looked upon favorably for centuries. If anyone in town knew how to use it, they kept it to themselves. She'd never heard of different kinds of magic.
"Magic comes in many forms, like food. Hot, cold, savory, spicy, bland, sweet."
She glanced over at his dark robes.
"What kind do you practice?"
"Most magi practice combinations, depending on developed skill and innate talent. There are 5 sects. I'm most adept at the 1st and 4th.
"That doesn't tell us peasants much," Celia replied, grimacing.
He replied with a smile in his voice.
"The 1st sect is what you just witnessed, harnessing raw magic to trap heat within a sphere focused on our location. A touch of the 2nd sect was used to pull heat from the ground in order to warm us up."
"Oh, that's actually very interesting. And the 4th?
"The magic of death, decay, and entropy, for the most part."
Celia's footsteps slowed.
She felt a sudden hesitation to ask more. The stranger must have noticed because he turned to look at her before slowing his own pace.
"What is it?"
he asked, sounding like he knew something was amiss.
"Death? Decay? I don't know what entropy is, but if it's associated with the others..."
She glanced back at the guard. He didn't say a word, but warily watched the stranger in the black robes with a hand on his sword grip. The stranger barked a quick laugh.
"I'm not here to kill anyone for my gods, if that's what concerns you. Your council would have likely seen me hang in the square first, don't you think?"
Given her feelings about the council in general, she chose not to answer.
"Death is a part of life. Decay is the natural end for most things. Ultimately, entropy is a nice way of saying the ultimate destination of all existence is formless chaos. This is a natural progression. I don't intend to make anything unnatural of it."
"Like murdering us with your magic out in the woods?"
The words came out reeking of brutal candor, but she didn't mind at all. The stranger laughed openly this time.
"If I wanted to kill people with my magic, I could have easily done so. I'm no master, but I'm not a student either. Trust me, this guard is here for your own emotional support. I can handle anything that comes after us. Well, most things. Including him if I wanted."
Celia turned to look at the guard a few steps behind them. He grimaced and his face grew red. She thought she saw a slight flash in his eyes, but if it was there, it passed quickly. The warmth of the heating spell made her wonder if it was something to truly comfort her or put her off her guard. She didn't exactly let her guard down before, but she certainly kept it up even more so now. They continued their walk in silence until it was broken by the mage's voice once more.
"You know, I think part of the problem is that we haven't even been introduced."
There was a pregnant pause.
"I'm Cole,"
he said, attempting to be as friendly as possible.
"Interesting," Celia replied. Cole's eyes widened momentarily. Apparently, he wasn't a stranger anymore.
"Did your mother name you that because of the hair, the robe, or your soul?" He ran a hand through his thick hair. It looked like it had been taken better care of than her own.
"I didn't have hair when I was born, or the robe. My soul is my own business, thank you."
Celia nodded.
"Okay, fair enough. I'm Celia."
"Nice to meet you, Celia," Cole said, turning to her and smiling.
"I'm Glenn," came a voice from behind them. They both turned to see the guard give a curt nod to them both.
Celia stared for a moment, having forgotten he was there.
"Nice to meet you, Glenn," she replied awkwardly.
"Now that we're friends," Cole began.
"Don't get ahead of yourself," Celia interrupted.
"Now that we're friends, why do you come out here for the apothecary? Are you the only one?"
Celia pursed her lips. "My sister used to come with me. We gathered herbs and such for others in town. It's what we traded. Our jobs, more or less."
"I can see why. It's quite a walk. Useful too, though," he added casually.
"Yes, we get by quite well. Well."
She trailed off after the use of "we." She sighed and Cole looked slowly over at her.
"Gregory mentioned your sister."
His tone was soft. Her eyebrows knitted together.
"Why? That doesn't make any sense. Why would he share something like that with a stranger?"
Her voice grew angrier with each word. Cole put a hand up.
"He said you were having a very rough time. You keep going out to look for her. When I mentioned I needed some unique ingredients of my own, he wanted us to go together. He hoped my specialties would either help bring you some kind of closure or at least give you more information."
After his explanation, she calmed down significantly. That made sense. Gregory was looking out for her. She still didn't appreciate being sent out with a strange mage and one guard. Not that anyone in town would know how to handle a mage anyway. Well, you're about to find out. It's just up ahead.
She pointed to the trees that hid the ridge up ahead. The land dipped, then sloped back upwards to a dark green wave cresting underneath a gray, cloudy sky. Once more, she was back at the worst place on Alda. One familiar and strange. This time, she also had a death mage with her.
Well, this is different, Cole said when they arrived at the multiple patches of herbs and flowers in front of the ridge.
Is this typical here?
Celia shook her head.
No, you won't find clusters like this anywhere else along the forest's edge. I think perhaps a shipment of herbs, plants, seeds, or some combination wound up deposited here. Perhaps it grew and flourished over time.
Couldn't have been a good thing that caused it all to be left here, Cole remarked.
My thoughts exactly. He smiled.
Well, let's see what I can find then.
Do you know what you're looking for? His eyes scanned the colorful quilt around them.
Scarlet milkweed. Some call it blood flower.
She mumbled as she thought, then said,
That won't grow here. Too cold during the winters.
Fairy wand? He asked.
I've heard of it. Gregory doesn't ask for it, though.
You know your ingredients, he said with a touch of approval in his voice.
I told you, this is my job.
Do you know how to read?
Yes, I do.
Ever thought of apprenticing for Gregory?
Celia shrugged. Never had much interest. I enjoyed coming out here with my sister. Not many people want to go this far for herbs and flowers, or so they say. But they pay for it well enough.
The bushes and plants rustled quietly as Cole made his way slowly through them, watching the ground.
I bet they do. The use of magic and magic-adjacent practices have long been frowned upon.
It was quiet again, but for the slight rustling of their search and the occasional yawn from Glynn the guard.
I'm sorry about your sister, Cole said, cutting the quiet. He sounded genuine. I don't have any siblings myself, but I do have family.
Celia wanted to keep her thoughts off her sister as much as possible. This close to the forest, it was almost too much to ask.
Then why aren't you with them?
It was a poignant question. She'd never leave her sister's side again if she had the choice.
I, like you, have a job to do as well. Takes me far from home.
Celia licked her lips. They'd gone dry from the cold. With Cole farther away, the heating spell must have followed him and left her behind. The chill had begun to seep in more and more since they began searching. She took her flask from her hip pouch and drank.
Understandable, she replied after slaking her thirst.
Cole stuttered for a moment, then finally managed to get out a question.
Can you tell me what happened?
Celia's breath caught for a moment, then she sighed heavily.
I've told the story over and over. Ask Gregory or the captain of the guard or one of the other damn council members. I'm not repeating it again.
After a moment, Cole asked,
Please, Gregory wanted me to help you too.
I thought death was a part of life. Why should you pursue this anymore? She answered curtly. Cole crossed his arms. I thought you insisted she was alive. A scornful laugh escaped Celia's mouth.
Gods, is there anything Gregory didn't tell you? Are you aware of my feminine cycle? Should we find some herbs to help with that?
Cole pointed somewhere on the ground nearby.
Fennel, he said flatly. It's supposed to help with that.
Her mouth gaped open and her anger flared. Cole raised his hands as though he was conceding, but she knew it was also meant to apologize and try to calm her. Puffs of air came in small clouds from her mouth as her mind floundered. She glared at him, but he merely stared at her in return, lowering his head slightly. His eyes were soft but resolute, his expression stern.
Fine. I refuse to think she's dead. No one has found her body or Nolan's, the guard that came with us. I felt her presence. I feel it every time I come here. I know she's alive.
A warm, wet sensation filled Celia's eyes. She didn't want the tears, but they came regardless. Her lip quivered and warm streaks fell down her face, but she refused to weep. Cole nodded slowly. He uncrossed his arms and looked around. She wasn't sure if it was an awkward gesture, but he lifted his chin toward the forest and called out.
Oh, look at that. Fairy wand.
He walked over to the cylindrical clusters of tiny white flowers and beckoned her over. She helped him pluck them and began laying them gently in her basket.
Death is our destiny, Celia, he began, speaking tenderly and slowly. We are grains of sand in a vast, unfeeling ocean. Once we come to terms with that, it provides a level of peace, even purpose.
Celia sniffed, in part due to the cold. She felt the heat of the insulation spell begin to warm her bones, though.
Is that what your gods teach you?
I don't worship gods, he replied plainly. Our ancestors worshipped gods. Some people today still do, holding on to a hope that no longer exists. I live in reality.
The fairy wand snapped as her plucking grew more intense. She felt a sermon coming.
I suppose you're going to preach to me now?
A soft chuckle and sly smile.
No preaching.
They continued their harvest until her basket was nearly half full.
I need to stop with the fairy wand. Gregory wanted some things of his own.
Cole wiped the beads of sweat from his forehead.
Of course, lead the way.
They continued plucking and pruning until Celia had everything she needed and wanted. A few of the things she picked for herself would help her sleep tonight.
You lied to me,
she accused quietly, as they both stood once they were finished.
About what?
He replied in a tone indicating he wasn't worried about her claim. Celia hesitated, pondering if she was overthinking, but she decided it was too obvious.
You said you came here looking for fairy wand.
You acted like you were searching for it, but you walked straight toward it as you pretended to look.
Well, damn, he sighed.
Glenn took a step toward them. A scowl caused his beard to turn crooked on his face.
What do you want? She asked. Give me a good answer before this turns ugly. Not that there's much we can do to stop you, I suppose.
The arms hidden within the dark, glossy robes crossed across Cole's chest.
Gregory and I were discussing medicine. He asked about potions that could soothe nerves or ease heartache. He heard about magic that could do such things. So I was curious and knew he wouldn't ask about such things lightly. The conversation turned to you. I wanted to help.
You're still lying, Celia said, and Glenn stepped closer.
It's getting late, too late for what I really want to do to help.
Cole regarded the forest.
You say she disappeared in there.
Celia hesitated, the memory still painful, the wound still fresh. She nodded stiffly.
We'll come back tomorrow. No harvesting, no gathering. We'll go in where you last saw her and investigate. Together.
I've looked many times. Others have too. Do you have some kind of magic that could help?
He turned back to look at her. His gray eyes turned a shade darker. Perhaps. Despite being in the confines of the insulation spell again, she crossed her arms at an imagined chill.
Being this close, something is in there. You're right. About the shadows.
Celia wanted to be angry at Gregory and Cole yet again, but at this point, she wasn't surprised that the apothecary shared that too.
I can feel it from here.
She took a breath that shuddered slightly.
We should go look now,
she said, the words coming out before she could stop them. He shook his head.
No, we don't want to be in there when the sun gets low.
I thought there was nothing you couldn't handle out here, she chided with a hint of mockery.
I said most things. I'm not toying with whatever that is when the sunlight fades.
Okay, she acquiesced.
Let's return home then.
The three of them gathered together to keep warm as the cold grew more intense. As they walked away, Celia turned to look back at the forest. It seemed to be even darker within the trees than before. She stole a glance at Cole, who looked straight ahead, his eyes still a darker shade of gray, like a patient storm. The clouds hung like a gray blanket over the landscape the following day. Light winds meant less chill, and Cole didn't need to use his insulating spell for their trip. No guard accompanied them. Both Cole and Celia wanted to travel alone, and she and Gregory vouched for the mage. The whole walk there was rather quiet. Celia had assured Gregory upon their return yesterday that Cole had been helpful, and they wanted to investigate further together. The apothecary and the mage seemed to share some sort of bond already. As Gregory looked to Cole when Celia said this, and the mage nodded. When they drew closer once more to the ridge, Celia felt pressed to ask, "Why do you want to help me? Is that all you came here for? Is it some magical thing?" He smirked.
"No, my purpose for coming to your town is a completely separate issue. In fact, I have to get back to said issue upon our return. I'm a people person, you could say. I noticed something different about you compared to the other townsfolk."
She still didn't like how that sounded, but let it be. He could have done horrible things and worse to her and the guard yesterday, but he didn't. Celia tried to focus on the positive. Someone who, possibly, really could protect her if it came down to it, escorted her to help her look for her sister. Someone who knew magic and might actually provide new information. Eventually, the bleak, deep green spread of trees marking the forest on the ridge loomed before them. A hopeless weight settled onto Celia again. She prepared herself for more disappointment. Cole's eyes once again turned a stormy gray. He stared into the woods.
"Are you ready?"
His voice was grave and cold. Celia began to wonder if she really wanted to follow him. She clenched her fists until her knuckles popped. No regrets.
"Yes,"
she replied with gravitas equaling his own. They entered together, side by side, into the other world of the shadowed woods. Celia couldn't remember the last time she'd felt this uncomfortable. Cole's presence may have played a part in it. It was the first time someone accompanied her to look for her sister since the first investigation by the captain of the guard. It was also the first time she'd been alone with someone in here. But there was something else. Some unease she couldn't explain. It was directly tied to Cole, this much she knew. He was a death mage, though. Perhaps he just exuded that sort of feeling inside the confines of a god's forsaken forest.
"There's a lot of power here," he said in a low voice. "A lot of resonance of the fourth sect. Someone was busy here long ago."
"This place is evil," Celia hissed. "This is the type of place you're familiar with, Deathmage?"
Cole scowled at the remark.
"Priests often get caught with their hands in the temple coffers. Guards manipulate shop owners. Apothecaries sell fake medicines. There are those who mishandle their authority and power all the time. My people are no different."
She gave him a cautious look.
"What sort of things could they have been up to? What is wrong with this forest?"
He stopped. The soft sound of rustling robes was the only noise heard. Cole looked around, his neck craning and heels pivoting as he took in the forest around him.
"Who knows, but the resonance is getting stronger.
He peered into the distance, squinting his eyes. Suddenly, he began walking again and made straight for a particular tree. Celia followed and saw that it was one with the discoloration on the side. Cole sneered.
"What is it?"
He crossed his arms and looked over at her. An eyebrow raised, and he appeared hesitant. He turned away, stared for a moment, then went to another tree. This one also had the discoloration. They continued to walk and found several more.
"Did you notice this the previous times you came here?"
he asked, referencing the splotches.
"Yes, I assumed it was just moss or something, a discoloration in the trees."
Cole scratched his chin. "I'm afraid not."
"Then what is it?"
The rise and fall of his shoulders was the only giveaway that he let out a deep breath. "What remains of a human being?" Celia's jaw dropped. She felt dizzy. It couldn't be. She couldn't have walked past these so many times and not noticed it was blood.
"It doesn't look like blood."
Her voice came out weak and cracked. "Blood, some tiny viscera, not very noticeable. Some of the stains are older than others. The tree should have grown over them, but that doesn't seem to be the case." His voice lowered as he leaned over and looked closer at one of the more visible patches.
"These people were utterly disintegrated."
She put a hand over her mouth. Then she turned and emptied her stomach all over the forest floor. Her face felt hot from the exertion and from embarrassment. She took a large swig from her water canteen and rinsed out her mouth. Cole had a slight smirk on his face as he put a hand on her shoulder. "It's certainly not pleasant."
"What did this?"
she asked, trembling after vomiting.
"I don't know. I'm not sure I want to." "But..."
"Don't say anything about me being a death mage," he interrupted, his voice brusque. "I'm starting to find that particularly agitating."
"I'm sorry," she returned.
"Magi study. Not all magic is known to everyone, even the masters. I'm nowhere near that talented or skilled. Magic doesn't mean we can snap our fingers and find answers. I know the Fourth Sect is very strong here. I thought it was because of some practicing magi from times past. Maybe one of the inheritor's offspring was attracted to the lingering magic, or maybe it was the other way around and the magi came to worship or study the thing. I don't know. I do know that something resides in these woods, and it is old, and it is powerful. We need to leave."
"We were looking for my sister," Celia reminded him.
He put his hand gently on her upper arm.
"I'm sorry, Celia, I truly am. But your sister and the other guard..."
He shook his head.
"They can't have survived whatever is here."
Once again, her jaw fell. Her eyes felt warm and her throat tingled.
"I felt her presence," Celia said with a hint of desperation. "You are a magi. You know that has to mean something."
His eyes darted around. Cole began to look visibly nervous.
"I can explain that later, but you're reaching out with your own potential now. It can sense you too. Your love for your sister is empowering it."
"I don't understand."
Celia's voice broke. She pulled away from him.
"Are you going to help me or not?"
"As much as I can,"
he answered, but his focus was no longer on her. He looked around, his mouth open and his hands apart as though he were going to grab something.
"But the thing in these woods, the shadows you saw, they do not enjoy the feelings you have for your sister. We have to go, now."
That's when she felt it. The same sensation the last time the forest changed in her eyes, and the shadows of the trees turned black as the night sky. She saw something in the shadows, but couldn't make out what it was. Despite looking right at it, her eyes refused to focus, refused to register in her brain what she was seeing.
Faster than she could comprehend, Cole shouted more of the strange, lilting words, and his hands flashed in a series of short gestures. He grabbed Celia and they shot off like an arrow, her head snapping back. Branches flicked her skin painfully. The sound of black robes fluttering violently, the wind pulled at her hair. It was exhilarating and terrifying all at once. Suddenly, she saw light and felt herself crash onto the ground. Cole was holding her tightly. Though they only fell a few feet, he'd grunted from the impact and groaned as they lay there on the ground. His robes fell around her and smelled of both earthy and flowery odors.
"That hurt," he grunted.
Celia felt his arms relax and was able to make her way to her feet. Both of them stood shakily. Cole slapped at his robes to remove leaves and twigs. Celia still felt her hands trembling. Under normal circumstances, that might have been entertaining.
"Shit,"
Cole cursed, leaning forward and putting his hands on his knees.
"That was close. Very, very close."
He stood up straight.
"You survived that on your own?"
His tone heavily suggested he didn't believe it.
"Yes," she replied simply. "Whatever that was. What about our escape?"
she asked, her voice rising with the question.
"That magic was, well, impressive. Not that I have anything to compare it against."
"Survival instinct. I've never actually used the spell before. It's supposed to be an escape method for those of us who travel."
"It worked."
"Indeed it did." He sounded surprised with himself. As her heart settled down, Celia began collecting her thoughts. A lot of words, names, and phrases were turning through her head. A lot of things that sounded absolute that she didn't like.
"Cole, can you explain what's going on? You were describing a lot of things I'd never heard of. I think it may be time you do some preaching."
He pulled a twig from his robes, the sharp end taking a strand of fabric with it. He patted a few spots of his robe down and then ran a hand through his hair.
"What would you like to know about?"
Celia mulled over the possibilities. She didn't quite know where to start either, but it only took a moment to go with the obvious choice.
"Let's start with this. Why are you certain that my sister is dead?"
He nodded softly, as if he understood perfectly why this was her first question.
"You really think she survived what we just went through? A town guard is nothing against that." "I survived,"
she shot back quickly. He sighed and shook his head.
That's a little different."
"A little?"
"You have something working in your favor that she likely did not."
He spoke slowly, as if he were carefully choosing his words.
"And what would that be?"
Celia pressed.
"You have a connection with magic that may have helped you survive."
"I have absolutely no magic powers," Celia scoffed.
"Again, magic isn't something you snap your fingers to and make things happen. You can be tethered to a particular kind of magic and not have any talent to use it whatsoever. And if you don't know about your connection, then you certainly wouldn't. I've grown up around magic, but I'm still aware that its practice is all but extinct in most parts of the world. I assure you, though, you have it." "How did it protect me?"
He shrugged. "All I have is conjecture. I've heard the Fifth Sect can outright guard you against the inheritors and their children. In your case, I can only assume it was curious about you, since your connection is middling at best and unrefined. It probably looked at you like a stray dog, perhaps." She chuckled dryly. "That's flattering. What is this Fifth Sect I'm connected to?"
He raised a hand and frowned. "I wasn't finished explaining. You aren't connected with the Fifth Sect. You, like me, are tethered to the Fourth."
She grimaced and cocked her head. Celia waved the idea away. I'm not connected with death magic, she concluded.
Cole rolled his eyes. It's not death magic, Celia. There's more to it than that.
How do you know about this connection?
She asked, her tone giving away her impatience. His expression changed. It didn't harden necessarily, but it did show further resolve.
I noticed it when I first saw you on the street, after I left the council chambers. It's one of my gifts and why I do what I do. I can sense magic auras. It makes the residual magic like what lies in those woods resonate even stronger for me.
Celia gritted her teeth. That was the look he gave her. He noticed this magical tethering.
Anything else you're hiding?
She asked, with an edge to the question. I've never hidden anything. He barely finished speaking before Celia said accusingly,
Did you bring me out here as bait for that thing? Some kind of experiment?
What? No. He huffed in exasperation.
When Gregory told me about your sister, I was curious about the link between her disappearance and what you said you saw in the woods. I wanted to investigate with you, not use you to some other end.
Her response was cold.
How can I believe that?
Because I could have left you there to die, easily.
Cole actually sounded wounded. Her accusations pierced him. Celia felt a tinge of regret, but was still hesitant to believe him. Her father always said she was the more stubborn of his two daughters.
You're saying my sister, yes?
She couldn't finish the thought out loud, though Cole completed her thought as it echoed painfully in her brain.
Dead, Celia, just as you've been told. Her remains are right there, on one of those trees.
Tears fell freely down her cheeks. She couldn't stop them, but Celia refused to let out any cries of anguish. That would be giving in. It still didn't explain one thing.
I can still feel her, even now.
She choked out with all the strength she could muster.
That could be the influence of whatever's in the woods. Your sister is gone, I promise you.
Cole's words were desperate, pleading. Perhaps he wasn't here for some sinister purpose. However, it didn't change what she had to do. Turning sharply, Celia stormed toward the forest again. She made it a few steps before a strong hand gripped her upper arm.
Where are you going? Cole asked.
I'm done with this. Let go of me, Cole. I'm not coming out until I find Serena or I'm dead.
You and I both know how that's going to turn out.
We don't, she replied harshly, her voice cracking from lingering sorrow.
Celia, I don't know what's in there, but I have an educated guess. This will not end well for you.
You keep saying things like that, but none of it makes sense, she shouted at him.
Did your people do this? Who are your people? What do you want?
He released her arm and stepped back. A wry smile crossed his face.
I never got to preach, did I?
Celia turned back to him, breathing heavily. She swallowed and nodded.
I'm a mage, not a cleric or a priest, but my order does worship very powerful things. I guess you could say we're a bit of both mage and missionary. The people of the old world worship gods and goddesses, both light and dark, and everything in between. Not all of them were wrong in doing so, actually. It's just that there's something greater. Something above the simple deities of man, dwarf, and elf kind. Something above and beyond the limits of time and even reality.
Celia's muscles relaxed. Cole's words didn't sound practiced. They were genuine. His voice was soothing, and it provided a pleasant distraction.
My order is called the Black Gnarl. Since the first kin walked Alda, our order has been there. The founder was one of them. The Black Gnarl wanted to return the world to its original creator,
the obscured throne. The first kin stole Alda from its creator.
And the thing in the woods, what does that have to do with this?
Cole looked at his hands, opening them palm up like he wanted to hold something. Think of the obscured throne as a gardener with many gardens. One of its gardens is Alda. The plants are the inheritors, all different in ways pleasing to the throne. Like herbs, they're different. Some serve different purposes that may overlap with others. They're affected by their environment. He gestured to the woods. Things such as that dwelling in the forest are like the creatures attracted to the plants. Some are aphids, some are bees, and bees sting. Celia crossed her arms and frowned.
Bees sting. They don't devour people and leave nothing but bloody stains behind.
Have you ever seen the bees further south? Cole joked. Celia didn't respond, and he understood his poor timing.
So what are we? Celia asked. Are we the dirt?
He shook his head.
No, we don't matter enough to be the dirt. We're not even nutrients from the soil. We're the space in between the dirt, so inconsequential as we are.
Celia dropped her arms.
So why even bother with what you're doing?
Cole shrugged. A lot of people ask that of those who seek a higher power. Why should the gods notice anyone? And the throne is above even the gods.
I don't care about the throne or the gods, Celia replied, turning her head to look at the forest.
But at least you explain the shadows in the forest.
A little.
He gestured to the forest as he spoke. That's not an inheritor. Otherwise, neither of us would be able to do much of anything. It's one of the insects. More like a wasp than a bee. To get outside my analogy, it's more like a wolf. Now that it understands you and your fourth sect limitations, it won't hesitate to take you. I gave it pause, but barely. Your arcane connection is a stronger smell, but also a bigger deterrent. When I became involved, it probably lashed out. Celia walked back over to him. She stood next to Cole, and they looked at the forest together.
Do you have any idea what it is? She asked.
No. The things that the rupture brought into this plane of existence are sometimes very unique. I personally haven't heard of anything like this, but I'm not surprised. It could live in the shadows. It could be the shadows itself. As I said, the throne and all things tied to it are above reality, beyond understanding for our limited minds. That was a much better explanation. This explanation left just as many questions, but at least an understanding of the dangers of the forest on the ridge. For the first time, Celia truly felt afraid of what was in there.
Shall we go home?
She said in a defeated tone. Cole looked over at her. Yes, he replied with sympathy. It was late afternoon when they arrived back in town. There was still time until evening, so Cole invited Celia to eat at the local inn. He traded goods from his home for a week's worth of room and board. She took the offer, being too exhausted to cook for herself. Before their food arrived, she'd had another question for him. One that became lost in the emotions and memories and preaching.
You never told me why you're actually here, she said as she sipped a glass of tea.
Cole took a drink of his wine, then another. I'm here to visit with the people, explain the situation, convince whoever's willing to listen to come with me. She was in the middle of picking up her cup once more when it nearly slipped, tinking against the plate. She must have misheard him.
Come with you.
Another drink of wine, this one longer and deeper. The world outside my home is on borrowed time. I'm here to take back everyone I can. Godscorn is the safest place to be. Soon, the only place.
Is this your convincing speech? She asked dubiously.
He chuckled.
No, I think we're fairly familiar by now. I soften the blow more with others.
And?
she asked with a sharp upward inflection.
He certainly wasn't going to leave this kind of topic hanging between them.
I told you I haven't lied to you, and I won't. The throne is returning to take Alda. Others like me are on a pilgrimage to visit the towns and villages that are left to bring as many as we can to Godscorn before it arrives. The inheritors are reclaiming the land as we speak.
His eyes lingered on her for a moment. There was a sadness there.
There's not much left, from what I've seen. Most places are abandoned at best, haunted or possessed at worst.
She shook her head. The words came with difficulty. They hung sour in her mouth before coming out.
And you worship these things?
Alda was stolen. Wouldn't you be angry if a precious possession was taken from you and hidden away?
I don't think I'd kill millions over something.
Her mind thought back to all the people who died during and since the rupture centuries ago, most in horrifying ways.
We're not unfathomable beings, he replied plainly.
I definitely am not. Their food arrived, and both ate heartily. The meat was warm, the vegetables fresh, and it made one forget the cold outside and within one's heart. Celia drank the last of her tea and sat with both hands holding her mug, feeling the last of the warmth fade from it.
Thank you for the food, she said. I truly appreciate it.
My pleasure, he returned with a smile. I'm going to retire to my room. I'm quite tired after today. I'll come see you soon. I have work to attend to now that I've helped you and Gregory.
Yes, she said, letting a silence hang in the air for a moment.
Thank you for that as well.
Would you like me to escort you back to your home? He asked.
No, I'm fine on my own. You go get some rest.
He nodded and rose from the table. The sound of his footsteps and rustling robes faded. Celia was left alone, staring at an empty teacup. A lone tea granule floated in the remaining liquid. She thought about her small town drowning in the events Cole described. He hadn't given her any reason to doubt him. This scared her most of all. Celia was content to remain within the borders of her town. Once again, she took other work instead of going to the herb patches near the forest on the ridge. Cole had warned her away, so she took his advice for now. She wanted to ponder what she'd learned and what Cole had said when they ate together. They crossed paths at least once a day. It consisted solely of friendly small talk, Cole asking for directions or if Celia knew this or that family. They shared lunch once, but the conversation remained normal. It was like he walked away from that dinner and left all the weight of the events prior in his wine glass. Maybe that in and of itself was a spell. She didn't know. She also wasn't sure how to feel about it. Grief and ignorance had left Celia exhausted for so long. Perhaps getting a few answers left her emotionally and psychologically relieved for the time being. One night, about a week after Cole and Celia's dinner at the inn, a knock came on the door. She'd been winding down from a hard day of delivering flour for the miller. Her muscles were sore, and she looked forward to the fresh bread provided by the baker for her services. With a weary sigh, she stood and prepared a polite response for whoever waited at the door. The hinges creaked as the door slid open barely an inch. Celia didn't care who it was. She wanted to hurry this person on their way. Her eyes widened when she noticed Cole standing there. Oh, good evening, Cole, she said, trying to keep the surprise out of her voice.
Hello, Celia. May I come in?
Of course.
She opened the door completely, and the mage stepped into her home. She didn't want visitors. Why did she feel the need to let him in?
It smells good in here.
Fresh bread from the baker, she replied. Celia offered him a seat. She brought two mugs and a pitcher of water for them to share.
Thank you, he said, taking a drink.
I don't have any wine, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I brought some,
he said with a hint of cheeriness in his voice. He produced a small bottle of white wine from his robe, revealing it like a magician. Celia smiled. He was nothing like his gods, for lack of a better term, or what his practice suggested he should be. He was kind and honest, thoughtful too.
We'll have to make do with these simple things. I don't have any glasses.
With a simple word and a flick of his wrist, the cork on the bottle popped into his palm.
I only care about what's in this bottle.
They both drained the water from their mugs, and he then poured for both of them. The bottle was small, and the mugs fairly large, so they each received half of the bottle.
I'm going to sleep well tonight, Celia commented. No matter how good or bad it is.
Ben Greensley insisted it was good. You don't know Ben Greensley, she scoffed. They both chuckled. Celia took a deep drink from her glass. It was fruity, tart, and sweet.
He wasn't wrong this time.
No, he was not, Cole agreed as he took another drink. What brings you to my empty house? Celia asked, taking another sip.
Oh, I wouldn't say this is empty. It's quite comfortable.
It used to be. Celia took a long pull from her mug. Cole nodded. He almost looked chided.
Tomorrow. It's time, he said in a low but confident voice.
Celia quirked an eyebrow and looked at him in silence.
I'm returning to my home, probably for the last time. The forays out into Alder are getting emptier and emptier.
Ah, Celia said, a hint of sadness in her voice.
You're here to say goodbye.
Quite the opposite. I'm taking people back with me, remember?
Yes, I remember.
Her words still came out heavy.
How many are coming with you?
She now thought of all the possible people who would be leaving the town behind. The world would be even emptier, especially for her. Cole took another drink.
Everyone.
His tone was cheerful. Celia's heart sank.
Everyone?
She echoed, somewhat in disbelief.
Well, almost everyone, he clarified pointedly.
Cole, I don't think I can do that. She didn't sound so convinced, even to herself. Doubt lingered within her. She rubbed her sore shoulders, wincing in pain at the muscle in her neck that she grabbed wrong.
Celia, surely you won't stay behind by yourself. We're going to one of the last civilized locations in Alda, most likely the last.
He stood and walked over to her. She still rubbed her shoulders. Cole gently put his hands on her shoulders and began rubbing the knots out of her muscles. It was heavenly.
And I cannot stress this enough. You have fourth sect potential. You're the only one I've found in my journeys in the last couple of years. You would not be any ordinary citizen.
Her mind was muddled by the wine and the massage. Her strained body and mind eased at the same time. She didn't want to think of such things right now.
Cole, I need to think about this, and I don't want to think about it when I feel relaxed for the first time in months.
He gave one last squeeze and removed his hands, letting them slide off her shoulders.
I understand. I do.
Celia stood and turned to him.
Give me tonight, okay?
He nodded firmly.
I will. I just want to give you one more thing to think about.
What's that? She gave him a thankful smile. Gently, he took one of her hands in both of his, cupping it between them. His hands were warm. He looked her in the eyes and said,
I don't want you to come back with me. I want you to come back with me.
Her head lowered, and she looked at their hands, which were sitting between them. She looked back at him, a mix of anxiety, fear, and intrigue no doubt sparkling in her eyes and showing on her flushed face.
Do you understand?
he asked. She took a deep breath in and out of her nose. Their faces seemed closer. He seemed closer. Did he do that or did she? Their lips touched, and once again, she didn't know who was responsible for what. It didn't matter anymore. They kissed each other deeply, and she found her hands inside the folds of his robes. She ran her fingers over his body, which was quite unlike that of a scholar. He wasn't muscular like a soldier, but she could tell it was a strong, disciplined body. His hands grabbed onto her, and they became lost in each other. Her heart raced in a good way for the first time in ages. She hadn't let a man into her bed in a very long time. She hadn't joined a man in his in some time either. It wasn't a priority for her. Romance, marriage, children, especially children. She didn't want to bring anyone up in this world. Not a pet or a child or a lover. There was too much to lose. So why was she laying here under her blanket, nestled in the arms of a death mage? Cole would hate it if she said that again, but the name stuck with her. Celia felt his chest moving rhythmically, with his breathing against her back. His arm draped over her and held onto her just beneath her breasts. "Are you awake?" she whispered. "I am now," he replied. "Sorry," she apologized. She didn't even know why she asked. She had nothing to say, really. He released her and sat up in bed. She felt like something more was missing suddenly. Cole got out of the bed and began to put his robes back on. "It's okay. I should return to my own room and prepare for tomorrow. That and I wouldn't want any strange gossip to start." He finished with a smile. "Too late," Celia groaned. "Any of the old women who saw you come already had their minds made up when the door closed." "Well, at least we didn't disappoint them." Celia smiled. "Tomorrow morning, in the town square. I'll be waiting." Cole took her hand and kissed it, letting his lips linger there for a moment. She looked into his gray eyes and nodded with a smile of her own. The door closed a few moments later. The taste of the wine lingered in her mouth. She stood and let the evening air coming in through an open window caress her naked body. The water in the other room was room temperature and stale, but it worked for now. She drank a full mug to help with the lingering sweetness and then returned to bed. That night she eventually fell asleep as her mind struggled between thoughts of her sister and Cole. Celia arrived at the town square to find half the town already there. Guards were creating convoys of the many gathered with all they could carry. Other families, small and large, continued to trickle in steadily. The families of the council were in the front of the masses, while the figureheads gathered in a half circle before Cole. He was talking to them, his hand movements making it seem like he was providing directions. Celia waited until he was finished. When the council turned to leave, Cole stood there for a moment, his head bobbling around as he took in his gathered flock. Celia began to walk up to him when he turned around. He smiled when he saw her, but then his forehead creased. "Celia, did you not bring anything with you?" There was no luggage of any kind on or with her person. She only wore a fresh set of clothes, the same ones she'd been wearing when Serena went missing. "I'm sorry, Cole. I won't be going with you."
"I don't understand. You have such a good life waiting for you. You'll be part of my order. We'll be together there, in the safest place on Alda."
The look in his eyes made her heart ache. He was telling the truth about everything. She would live well, and she would have him. But Cole wasn't family. He would never be the family she lost. "My mother and father died here. My sister, Serena. I still don't know if she's out there."
"I told you, Celia, she's gone."
He sounded angry for the first time. Several heads turned and looked toward them. He breathed and then lowered his head, calming himself. I know it hurts, but you know now. You know what happened. You can trust me on this.
She took one of his hands in hers, much like he did the night before.
I do feel I can trust you, Cole. I really do. But I feel if I leave here without Serena, if I leave everything behind without doing everything I can to find her and know for sure she's gone, as you say, I'll regret that more than anything. Could I truly be happy with you then?
Cole put his other hand over hers. Then he softly pulled away. He must have seen the determination in her eyes as his face hardened with its own resolve. A day's walk from here, there's a town by a small river. It's abandoned and falling apart, but it has a port where my ship is docked. The captain waits for me there. I won't be coming back here. No one will. But if you change your mind, the signs by the town call it Eldensburg. You'll have to catch up because I can't wait. I hope to see you there. She gave him a genuine smile. Her eyes began to swell with tears.
Thank you, Cole.
And goodbye. He kissed her on the cheek and returned to overseeing the townsfolk, preparing to leave. By early afternoon, the last of the townsfolk trailed off as the convoy made its way to the waiting ship. Cole was in the front and one of the first to go. He turned before leaving, giving her one last longing look. She lifted a hand to wave goodbye and watched as he turned, downtrodden. A few had stopped to say goodbye and asked if she was sure that she wanted to stay. She exchanged a few hugs and handshakes. When she could no longer hear anyone, she let herself cry openly. The town was truly empty. No one stayed behind. Now she was utterly alone. Celia found a bottle of wine that had been left behind, along with a few things to eat. After her meal, she turned back to the side of town facing the ridge and made her way there. The walk was cold without Cole's insulation spell. It made her long for him more. She gritted her teeth against the cold and the ache in her heart and pressed on. The ridge came in sight. Seeing it made her angry. It had cost her so much. She stood at the forest's edge and shouted into the darkness. She hated it. Whatever it was in there, she hated it with all her being. Then she calmed herself and listened. She could still feel Serena's presence. It was faint, but she felt it. The two had always shared a bedroom, even as adults. The feeling was like when someone woke up before you and was missing, but you knew they were still near.
I'm coming, Serena, Celia said, and made her way into the forest, where lurked the spiteful, ink-black shadows.
And she came to regret everything.